Sunday, the 10th of January, Kof Dal Shavat, Teves, Rabbi Ben Zion writes, Kashrus begins at home, part one. This week's Shiurim have been sponsored by family of Chesna in honor of the forthcoming wedding of their son, Yoni Chesna, to Shulamit Hirsch.
Recently I asked a friend of a friend to ask a friend of his to make some research for me as to the origin of the well-known English saying, charity begins at home. And I very quickly got back a message that charity begins at home was written in 1648 by a well-known English writer whose name I'm not going to mention in Mokum Kodosh, and that's where this saying comes from. I think it's further proof that although this type of research may be very convenient, the results aren't always accurate. And in this particular case, it's totally wrong. That's not the origin for charity begins at home. Charity begins at home is, in fact, the Havdal Elef of Dolos, a Befeish Pusuk, in Parashas Mishpatim, in Kesev, Talva es Ami, es Ho'oni Imach. And the Gemara Darshens in B'Metzia, Daf Ein Aleph, es Ho'oni Imach, Aniecho va'aniye ircho, aniecho koidmen. And Rashi says, aniecho means aniye b'nei beischo, aniye mishpachtecho. They come first. That is charity begins at home. Now the title for today's Start the Day of Torah Way, Kashrus begins at home. If I was to claim the credit for having coined this phrase, I'll probably be challenged as to the justification for saying that kashrus does in fact begin at home. Mehecha teise. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, Simon Pei Aleph, Sif Zayin. And the Ramal says, and the Ramal there is referring to the time before there were baby bottles and baby milk formula, and in those days a nursing mother who didn't have sufficient milk for the baby had to be given over to a nursemaid. So the Ramal says that the tinoik must not be given over to menekes nochris, because if the tinoik will be yoinig for menekes nochris, Metamtim isliboy, umoylid loy tevara, and it introduces into the baby a bad nature. Then the Ramal goes on to say that even if he's given over the menekes Yisraelis, this menekes Yisraelis must not eat dvorim asurim, because even though she's Jewish, if she eats dvorim asurim, that will also have the same effect on the tinoik. And all this, the harm will become apparent when the child gets older. Obviously as a baby one won't realize anything is wrong, but as the child gets older, then one will realize that something is very wrong, and that's all due to the fact that he was yoinuk from somebody who was eating dvorim asurim. So both the Shach and the Terezov ask the same kasha on this Ramor. What does the Ramor mean that even if the child's given over the menekes Yisraelis, she should not be eating dvorim asurim because it'll have effect on the child. She shouldn't be eating dvorim asurim whether she is nursing the child or not. Why is this woman eating dvorim asurim? And they both give the same answer, that the Ramor is saying that even if the mother herself is nursing the child, the tinoik, the baby, and the mother has been diagnosed by the doctors that she needs a certain food, and this certain food is not available kosher, so the Ramal is saying that you should know that even so, it is also going to be mazik the child. And the Shach says, "V'al yiten hu av lehu'em linoikis hayeled." You mustn't allow, the father mustn't allow the child to be nursed by the mother. Ele yaskeloi menekes Yehudis acheres. He must hire for the baby another menekes. Aye, is it costing geld? Kasha, it's cost geld. There's nothing new in that. Now, this But what's interesting is that this mother, it lav dafka that she's having a complete diet of Dvurim or Asurim. She's eating bread from Gajinskis, and she's eating fish from Leviosan fishmongers, and she's drinking milk from Haredi dairies. But there's one thing that she needs, that the doctors say that she needs in order to recover, and that one product is not available in a kosher version. And then maybe she's got a heter as a cholish yesh by sukuna to have Dvurim or Asurim. And Afila Ocha, the Tinoik, who himself is a Cholish Yesh by Sakuna Pi Shulchan Aruch, but if it's possible, it has to be avoided, and Bemeila, the father mustn't allow that the child should be nursed by the mother. The Ramor says in brackets that he got this din from the Agur Sashri. And the Agur Sashri got this din from the Sefer Oizurua, Rabbeinu Yitzchok Mevin, Rabbeinu Yitzchok from Vienna, who's one of the Gedolei Rishonim. The Bia Hagroh on this halacha says, where did Rabbeinu Yitzchok Mevin get this halacha from? He says he got it from the siddur that we learned yesterday, where Miriam said, "Vatoma achusoi el bas paroi ha'elach lekorosilach meinekes min hu evrios." And Rashi brings down the Gemara in Sechtes Sota Daf Yud Beis. The Gemara says, "Min hu evrios melamed shechzirosoi al meinekes mitzvios v'lo yanak." Moshe Rabbeinu would not be yonik from the meinekes mitzvios. Omakodish Baruch Hu, Pesh Osid Ledabere Mashkina, Yoinik to the Tomei. Mainly he wasn't Yoinik, and they eventually brought Moshe Rabbeinu to his mother. Rabbi Yaki Kamenetsky asks a Moedek Akasha. This is the Makar for the Halucha, which the Ramor brings down, that you mustn't give over the child, that the child should be Yoinik from somebody who's eating up Mechulis Hasuris. So Rabbi Yaakov and Kamenetsky asked, what on earth has this got to do with us? Moshe Rabbeinu was put in the tables Goyma, Hashkocha Plotus looked after him, that he should be nitzel from the Gezerah of Kalaben Hayilat Hayarit Hashlichua, and he shouldn't be Yoinik from Muhammad Sriyos, because he was also to be Moshe and Shal Yisroel, he was also to take the Eden out of Mitzrayim, and go up on Har Sinai, and speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Pe'el Peh, V'lei Kom Novi Oid Bi Yisroel K'moshe Shiyaduai Hashem, ponim el ponim. What's this got to do with us and with our children? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, "Amuya de kevalt was taken pasvah gudel b'Yisrael." Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that this halucha teaches us that Chazal demand from us that we have to raise our children on the highest possible standard. They should be roi ledaber mashchina. And Rabbi Yaakov says this isn't a sentiment from Magid, who visits us on Shabbos afternoon and says Avot on Perek Ubbos. This is a halucha lemaisa in Shulchan Aruch that we're mechuyev to see that a tinoik ben yoimoy should not come to him dvorim or asurim, because it'll be mazik later on in life. Kashrus begins not only at home but from the first moment when a yid is born, male or female. I rest my case. Yes, the shala. Where do we start? Should we start from shchita? All the different shchitas: shchita beef, shchita chicken. Is there a difference between all the shchitas? Is it correct what is widely overheard that meat I eat from this shchita? However, chicken I eat from a different shchita. Is there mukin to be hukal? And if kashrus begins at home, l'chayla, one would be justified in using an expression that the Chofetz Chaim uses in Mishabura, when the Chofetz Chaim Mishabura comes across a halucha that he finds contradicts what the Olam does l'maisa, he says, "Umikar teichucha megula." And from this halucha, one can see an open rebuke to those who are doing differently. Well, perhaps in this case, one could say it's an open rebuke for those who operate. I'm sure none of you will know what this means, but there is such a thing. It's called, what I call it anyway, the multi-level kashrus policy. The multi-level kashrus policy, at home works like this. In those who operate this policy, there's going to be a minimum of three levels. And it starts off with the boys under bar mitzvah and the girls under bas mitzvah. And they would be allowed to eat lemoshel Pringles that are bought in the local supermarket, which are produced in the UK with no hechsher. That's level one. Level two is the boys over bar mitzvah, the girls over bas mitzvah. And probably the mother as well, who is allowed to eat Pringles that are bought in the kosher grocery store, produced in the US, that has got the OU Hersher. Level 3 is the father who's a tzaddik mikuroi, although he allows all this to go on, he doesn't eat Pringles at all. Now this family in our mushul, when they go on holiday, one of two things happens. Either the three levels expand to so many levels that it becomes unmanageable, or the whole family amalgamates into just one level. L'chayre, that is not what it says in the book. In the book it says that if it's kosher, so the ganze mishpucha shall eat it gesinta hait. If it's not kosher, then don't even give it to Latinik ben Yoimai. So, to be honest, I was thinking of starting off today with Hechshelim. The minefield of Hechshelim that there are in the stores. I've got a list on my desk from 2008, and it's a complete list of world Hechshelim. 876 world Hechshelim. I'm sure you've heard this. You've overheard this, certainly. I'm sure everybody here in this room has overheard it. This statement from those who know a lot about kashrus. They say, all Hechshelim are exactly the same. There's no difference between Hechshelim. The difference is only money and politics. Now, on Friday, I got a list, the first release from 2010, which was barely a week old on Friday, were up to 1,004 world Hechshelim. Now that is an achievement, to have 1,004 Hechshelim across the world that are all exactly the same standard. Can you imagine the amount of effort that went into that? And what makes it even more remarkable is that if you look through the list, you'll see that 20 of these Hechshelim are from United States conservative rabbis who've also jumped now on this lucrative bandwagon and are giving Hechshelim, and they've also managed to keep up to this world standard of the 1,004 Hechshelim. They're exactly the same. So how can one tell which are the rogues and which are the genuine ones? Now, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I'm not going to start from this, because for two reasons. One is that it's taka very important, but it's not the most important point. And the second reason is that although it's only Sunday morning, if you start me off on this one, it's not a good idea, particularly if you're planning to be home for Shabbos. So perhaps we'll move on to start with the separation between milk and meat. Also a very, very important point. The moshel. What does one do with this mysterious occurrence that happens kumat in every household, I'm sure, that you suddenly find a milky spoon in the meaty sink or the meaty dishwasher? Does that need kashering? Is it sufficient not to just use it for 24 hours, or do you have to kasher it? Do you need two microwaves? The milch again, a fleshika microwave. What happens if the baby is sitting in the high chair and throws a bottle of milk across the kitchen and it splashes across a hot pot of soup? The pot of soup's got its lid on. Do you say, ah, well, Baruch Hashem, it had its lid on, nothing went inside, no problem? Or could there still be a shower even with the lid on and no milk going into the soup? Also, very, very important points, but I'm not going to start with that. Now, Boisai, the most important point that there is to start with when one discusses kashrus is unfortunately the one that the sutton has taken care of, that it's the one that is most ignored. And that is something that affects everyone, without exception, whether it's the housewife standing in the kitchen, or whether it's the mashgiach who's watching or overseeing a production, a food production in a factory, or whether it's a passenger who's eating a kosher in-flight meal, they're all affected by this. And even somebody who'd be so meticulous and so mahadar and kashrus that he wouldn't buy anything in, but he'd bake and cook and fry everything at home, and he would have his own shochet, and he'd have his own lake stocked with kosher species of fish, and he'd only buy salt, sugar, and ground pepper and flour, he'd also have this problem. And that is the horrendous problem of infestation of toluim in fish, fruit, and vegetables. Now, why is this such a horrendous problem? Well, the first reason, I'm sure that you know, but it's worth repeating because it's just shocking to hear it. And that is that if somebody, chas v'shalom, makes a mistake and goes into a supermarket and thinks they've bought a tin of baked beans that have got a hersher, and then after it's been brought home and it's been consumed, somebody noticed, rachmon letzlon, and the ingredients, that not only wasn't it with a hersher, but in fact there were nevelis inside this tin with the baked beans, which was not noticed. Then, rachmon letzlon, those who have eaten it have been over on the lav, on one lav of the issa of nevelis, the seichel kol nevela. I'm not belittling that lav in any way, chas v'shalom. However, if someone eats carp that have not been checked for parasites, or they eat salmon that have not been checked for the salmon lice, or they eat cod that have not been checked for cod worms, then because this is a sheretz hamayim, it's four lavim, and it's not even tasty. And if one eats vegetables where there are thrips on the vegetables, or a sheretz hasheretz al oretz, that is five lavim. And if one eats the mussel fruit that have got fruit flies on them, winged insects, then flying insects are six lavim. So we're talking four, five, and six lavim in the issa of shlutzim. The Ben Ish Chai in Parshas Achrei Mois brings a maaser that a Chucham Hasfardi was walking on Erev Pesach through a chutzah, a communal chutzah. He was on his way to bake Matzah's mitzvah. And he passes one of the front doors of the families living in that chutzah, and his Yiddish mama was standing outside with a table. And on the table she had two bowls, and she was checking lettuce from one bowl and putting it into the second bowl. And as he passed, the Chacham noticed the speed at which this was being done. And he went over to this woman and said to her, excuse me, please don't be offended. I know that you've got your hair covered kedasa kedin, but don't find it strange if I ask you, how many hairs have you got on your head? And she looks at him in amazement. She says, how can I possibly know how many hairs I've got on my head? So he says, you're wrong. It is possible to know how many hairs you've got in your head. What's not possible to know is the amount of isurim that you and your family are going to be over, rachmon al etzlan, tonight when they eat the kezayis moror at the Seder. So she says, what should I do? I can only hear God of a large family. My husband has invited many guests to the Seder. What should I do? So he said, says the Ben Ish Chai, trust me, b'yoyim hadin, that excuse will be meaningless. Now, Baruch Hashem, nowadays we have got the pre-packaged, ready-checked vegetables and herbs. But I'm keeping that for next time, Amir Hashem. So it's not pushit. This is not a pushit subject, and there are Baruch Hashem here very, very professional askunim, and if the professional askunim are really looking for a duba tov to be masakan, is to increase the amount of shiurim and public demonstrations, live demonstrations, so that the tzibba should understand what to be boidig for, what to look for, because it's recently the seminaries have started to have experts to come in to explain to the Talmidim. But the previous generation missed this. Now, the Klal Yisrael is blessed with a Muridic heritage. And part of the heritage is our Mesorah, the Mesorah that the families have got, the Mesorah that the communities have got. This Mesorah is the Chelik of Nitzchias of Klal Yisrael. However, to be very frank, any family that has got a Mesorah of how to check vegetables, then this is possibly the only example of a Mesorah that is not only totally useless, but it's downright dangerous. Because over recent years, this problem has become so many times worse that you can't put a figure on it. And the reason for that is that, or the reasons are many. One is that because of transglobal imports and exports, fruit and vegetables are coming from all points of the globe, and they're bringing with them the local insects, which are then colonizing in the new location, and they're managing to overcome by built-in resistance all but the most powerful insecticides. And the government won't allow the agriculturalists to use the most powerful insecticides because of the green lobby and for other reasons as well. So what have they done? They've done the easiest thing. They've moved the goalposts. They've made the tolerance level that you're allowed to have in a packet of vegetables more generous. So the mushal, if you would go out and buy a packet, a 1 pound packet of broccoli that comes to the United States, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration in America, who control the standard of hygiene in food productions, they now allow a pound packet of broccoli to have 276 green fly in it. It apparently only becomes a danger to the health when there's the 277th. Now, I cannot multiply 276 by 6 without taking out my phone and using my calculator facility on it, but it's a lot. And if you buy tomato juice, so for every 7 ounces, the FDA allows 20 fly's eggs in 7 ounces of tomato juice. So anybody who doesn't know how to be boidik lemushel spring onion mustn't allow it into the house. Spring onion needs bedikah. Spring onion is very heavily infested. It needs bedikah, and there's no use of trying it out at home on your own. You have to be shown by those who do know, because otherwise you'll stare it in the face and you won't even be able to identify it. Now, I don't want this all to be fire and brimstone, so I'm going to tell you a maisa that I heard about Reb Chaskel Abramsky, Zechon Baruch. Reb Chaskel Abramsky, who of course had the Muridik Eschus of completely changing Shechita in this country, amongst other Eschusim, was very makbid. One of his hakbudas bashkita was that an elderly or an older shoychet should receive a livable pension and should leave shkita. Ad kedei kach, that he would not eat from a shkita of an older shoychet. And he went for a few days holiday to Switzerland, and he was in a hotel, and when he came in, he called the proprietor and asked him, who are the shochtim who provide this meat with this hotel with meat? And they said there were two. He said there were two shochtim. One was an older shochet and one was a younger shochet. So Reb Chaskel Abramsky says, please, I'm asking you, for the few days that I'm here, only buy in meat from the younger shochet. And the proprietor agreed. One evening, he was served with chicken soup. And he noticed a fly in the soup. Now on Shabbos, there is a problem how to deal with this. According to some poskim, you take a spoon and you remove the fly to together with soup, not the fly on its own, because that is a shalah, a serious shalah boira, but you remove it with soup. According to the Balatanya, even that's not sufficient. It stays yotzai's fish, you can only well call Yisrael, but he says that you pour away the some of the soup with a fly. You shouldn't actually remove it with a keli at all. Al kaponim, the problem of a fly in soup is a Shabbos problem. It has nothing to do with kashrus. During the weekday, you remove the fly and you eat the soup, and you diet, and there's nothing wrong with the soup. Rav Chalskel Abramsky pushed away the plate, and when the waiter came in with the main course, he said, "I'm not eating meat." And this got back to the proprietor, who came in and said, "I ask you, Mechila, I see that Menah Shemayim Hashgucha Putus looked after you. I wasn't able to get last night when I bought the meat from the younger Shochet, so I was mutting myself to buy from the older Shochet because I wanted you to have the availability to be able to eat some meat whilst you're on holiday." Now, that Maisa, there's hundreds of Maisas like that. And the Maisa is not a Chiddush, because it's a Gemara in Masechtas Churin, Daf Hei Amud Beis, that a Philip Behemton Shel Tzadikim, the Gemara says, they were animals, Chamurim, that belonged to Tanuim, that would not eat feed, that where the Tumas and Maisas had not been removed. So the Gemara says, Tzadikim Atzkeman Leikoshkin. So Tosus asks, if Tzadikim are so looked after, why do we know there's Gemuras that says, L'moshul Tana Rebbe Yishmuel was once Nifshel and Hilchus Shabbos? So why was he Nifshel and Hilchus Shabbos if Tzadikim are being looked after? So Tosus says, this looking after tzaddikim is b'midah d'achila, is an inyonim of food. It's a bezoyin for a tzaddik to have eaten something which is not kosher. Now, the reason why it's a bezoyin, Mi'at Hashem will talk about next time, Lineda, but the fundamental principle is, like the Ramal says, that the non-kosher food has a very, very bad effect on the person who eats it. Now, so therefore it's not a chiddush that a gudel hadoyah was nitzel from such a michshul. What is a chiddush is, and you may think that I'm strange in saying this, so I challenge you to try it out at home. Anybody, whoever he is, for whatever walk of life, and whatever level, who undertakes to be mahada in kashrus, a long-term, lifelong commitment, sees Murdik Siyazi Dishmaya. There's no doubt about it. And not only is it Murdik Siyazi Dishmaya, it's open Siyazi Dishmaya that you'll see it happening in front of your eyes. I was sitting a few weeks ago at a Shulam Zucha, and an ordinary balbos here from the locality, a businessman, no different than anybody else in this room, except he is very makbid on kashrus. Very, very makbid on kashrus. He doesn't take, being makbid on kashrus really means you don't take anything for granted. You go into a grocery store, whether it's in Stavert Hill, or it's Williamsburg, or Meir Shurim, and you see that the fellow sitting behind the till has got a tsura. Ah, Hadras Ponim, it looks exactly like the painting of the Ramban on the Neue Sukkah. It still does not mean anything. Nothing at all. You don't take anything for granted. You want to know, what is it that I'm being given? And he was given a tea. Bashan tea, without milk, Friday night at the Shom Zucha by the Bal Simcha. And he asked for sugar-free sweetener. Low calorie. And the Bal Simcha brought him Splendor tablets. He said about Simcha, Splendor tablets is okay? Yes, I've asked. Splendor tablets is fine. He put in two Splendor tablets and stirred it. And the Basimcha went off to look after the other guests. He raised the cup to his lips. He sat next to me. I watched this. And he put the cup down and pushed the saucer away and said, "I feel uneasy about this." Sunday morning, I got hold of my friend's friend, who is by now quite fed up with me, and asked him to do some research on Splendor. And he got back to me that there's two forms of Splendor. There's Splendor in powder form, and there's Splendor in tablet form. The Splendor in powder form is completely kosher. There's no ingredient at all that can give any rise for concern. The Splendor in tablet form has got in it chulav akim. It's got milk powder in it. I would say, if I wouldn't be scared that you're going to laugh at me, I would say that we're not talking about here siyata d'shmaya. We're talking about, this is already verging on a modern day equivalent of Ruach HaKodesh. This is because somebody undertakes and means it seriously and wants to be mahadar and kashrus. I have to help them that in the schus Yisur Kedoshim, who are makbed on kashrus habayis, we should be zoicha to Yeshuas and refuas, and we should be zoicha to the gilish lema b'mehe b'meini umma.